The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks always for hanging out with me for this 43 minutes of talk time. 1 hour if you're listening live on Thursday nights or Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. I'm grateful to be here. We're going to have a great show today. Hot Rod will be joining us as always to give us a little update on current market conditions and the psychology of people when it comes to the markets reacting the way they are and the confidence and the world and where we stand on things today. So we'll talk about that. And then later on, Doug Hughes is coming back in the studio. He hasn't been in for a while. And we're going to talk about Catch-22. Do you feel like you're sometimes in a Catch-22? And I think many of us feel that way right now. You're darned if you do and darned if you don't. So we're going to talk about how to evaluate that. But before all of that, let's do a little tidbits news of the week brought to you, of course, by Unrivaled Electric. They want to be your electrician like mine. They specialize in generators and solar arrays. Find them on Facebook or simply give them a call or text them at 812-361-3604. Kenny Bland Auctions, I talked to Dirk last night. He's got some great auctions coming up. If you want a little farm equipment, if you want a gator, whatever, now's the time to be viewing KennyBlandAuctions.com. They have some really great things coming up. They are your full-service auction service and have been around forever. And, of course, our friend Lance Like of the Like Law Group, giving yourself and your family that peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. All right, no big surprise. S&P 500 is down 13.1% through 5-6 of 22, so last Friday. Now, the split between up and down days, 44 up, 56 down, compared to the 54-46 split achieved over the last 70 years. There are a lot of contrarians out there, or people that just like me say, hey, you have to take a more optimistic view of things. Let's widen your scope, widen your lens a little bit, because the S&P is actually up total return year over year as of the end of April. Now, it is now down slightly when you look at the rolling 12-month period. Now, here is something to keep things in perspective. The last seven times the index reported a negative total result over a trailing 12-month period. Now, so that's April to April, May to May. The index recorded a positive gain of at least 15% over the next 12 months. Okay, and the one-year average return of all seven comebacks is 27.6%. So just keeping things in perspective. Of course, no guarantee of future results based on that past performance, but I thought it was nice to at least share that with you and give you a little hope and optimism as we hopefully we turn the corner pretty soon. But declines do happen. With the closing on the S&P at around 41.23 last Friday, down from that point, of course, this week, the S&P was down 14%. Now, the decline in the index, this is the 21st tumble of at least 10%, but less than 20 in the last 50 years. But it's the fifth since 2015. Declines of at least 10%, but less than 20 from a previous close is essentially called what? A correction, right? We've heard that before. Correction, recessions, right? There's all of these words that we threw out there. Bull markets, bear markets, all of that. But the NASDAQ, it's been taking it on the chin, down 22.2% year-to-date through last Friday, and is down 24.1% from its all-time closing high. The 10-year Treasury back in May of 2020 was 0.7. It got all the way down to like 0.5, I believe, at one point. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note now is all the way up to 3.12% as of last Friday, And that is a monster, monster move. And that's why if you're looking at your statements here, and I'm going to do a video later today explaining this to our folks, that when interest rates go up that much, your bond values go down. We call it duration risk. And then we've had credit spreads widen as well, which means folks want to be paid more for taking on any kind of non-government debt. So it's an interesting time because the taxable bond market has produced a positive total gain in 42 of the last 46 years. That's from 1976, our bicentennial, and also when the Hoosiers won the national championship, of course, through 2021, or 91% of the time. But it is on track for its worst year, down 10.1% year-to-date. That's a pretty big move for bonds, and something we're certainly not used to, and something I have not experienced in my 28-year career as well. So it's hard to calm people down. But, you know, here's the thing, and we'll talk to Hot Rod about that. Bonds have maturity dates. They have fixed interest rates. And just because the value's down, it doesn't mean you're still not going to get paid. You're still going to get paid. And new money coming in is getting a much higher yield. So as you have things mature or new money comes in, those yields are much, much higher. In fact, shockingly high. And that there's a lot of money sitting in bank accounts earning nothing right now. So we're going to talk to Rod about what the opportunities are on a very short-term basis to get some very, very nice yields. Well, we have been on this for a long time. Demographics, right? The U.S. had 7.27 million births in the back-to-back years of 2020 and 2021. That's the fewest number of American births back-to-back in 40 years. 30 years ago, we had 8.27 million births back-to-back. So birth rates have declined. And of course, that does not bode well for future taxpayers. And thankfully, our doors still swing in here, so we need people. And if we're not going to have them ourselves, we got to invite them in because we need to support our social services program. When you have 91 cents of every dollar paying for Medicare and Medicaid, right? Interest on the debt and one other thing. Wow, we need people to pay for all of this. Speaking of taxes, moving across the line, California, I was actually in LAX about a week ago, and it is a beautiful airport. And my comment to my wife is, wow, look at this airport. And then my next comment was, how in the world are they paying for this? Well, of course, many of that comes from federal funds. But why did I say that? Because people are moving out of California. If you have any common sense and you make any money, California has the highest tax marginal rate in the nation with a 13.3% top rate. Neighboring Nevada has no federal tax, and one of seven states with none. People moving to Texas, right? People going to Florida. There's always more to the story when you move to a state with no tax, with no federal or state, no state tax. There's different taxes, you know, from property taxes to all kinds of sales tax, things like that. I know there's been a big push, and I'm grateful for that, for kids to consider the trades and not the traditional four-year schools, not meant for everyone. But still, the majority of people went to college. 62.7% of the 2020 high school graduates enrolled in college, and 61.8% in 2021 also enrolled in college. So I'm assuming that trend will continue. But I can tell you this, a lot of them drop out the first year. That's why if you have trouble, if you're a kid having trouble getting into the school of your choice, go somewhere else for 1 year, and guess what? It's a heck of a lot easier the second year to get in exactly where you want to go. Because according to a Gallup poll, 32% of currently enrolled college students have considered withdrawing from school in the past 6 months for at least a semester, primarily due to pandemic stress or monetary stress. And my son is one of them. So he said, dude, I'm not going back. I'm miserable. This is driving me crazy. And I'm like, dude, I don't want to waste any money. So let's take a little break. And he is, and he's doing great. He's working every day, doing what he would hope to do in construction management. He's doing a lot of that work now, and see if he likes it. If he does, he'll go back, possibly, hopefully. And if he doesn't, maybe he heads off to a trade. You never know. But you have to be supportive of these young people, especially with all the stress that they've been under. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, let's get old Hot Rod on the phone. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Rod Holloway joins me now on the phone. Of course, you can hear him on Mondays and Fridays on Glass in the Afternoon. Big Show Friday will be hot as always. And Rod, man, I can tell you that it's never been more interesting to hear you talk to Glass, because we are in this crazy environment since the first of the year, and it's been just spot on. And I can't, I mean, we were talking this morning, and not to, you know, get your head any bigger than it already is, Hot Rod, but you've been pretty right about a lot of things, and that's why we've continued to have you on the show, because we need to have this timely information, mainly to give people some perspective, to keep people from panicking and all of that. I'm going to share with you a stat, Rod, that I didn't get a chance to share with you, but I shared with everyone else, that if you look at where we are today, and you widen your lens a little bit, and you say, okay, well, what about the S&P 500 over the last year? We're basically about flat now. As of last Friday, we were still positive this week, you know, pulled back some. But here's the interesting thing. The last seven times that the index has recorded a negative total return over a trailing 12-month period, the index bounced back each time with a positive gain of at least 15% over the next 12 months. The one-year average return of all seven comebacks is 27.6. Now, there's no guarantee that's going to happen exactly the same way as it has the last seven times. But again, it gives people some perspective to say, don't panic. It's common to have declines. In fact, when you look at history, 10% declines or even more happen more frequently than we think. In fact, it's happened five times since 2015, which isn't that many times. And I think that's the recency bias that we talk about, that give people a sense of panic when they see their accounts down. And listen, I understand. You know, Rod and I still work every day. We still earn a paycheck each week. We get it. And when you're retired, the mindset is much different. But Rod, I think widening the lens, giving some perspective, keeps people from doing something silly, which is to react emotionally and do the wrong thing exactly the wrong time.
Yeah, most certainly. And I think part of it is also when you have a market that was so unbelievably strong that we'd had over the last few years, in which no matter what got thrown at it, it continued to go up and up and up. Well, everybody then begins to set their high watermark to those high levels. And then they start looking, when you start the year out like we've had this year, in which every month but March has been negative so far, and we've gotten off to a negative start so far in May. Well, they're benchmarking to that all-time high. Well, unfortunately, the market shouldn't have necessarily got to that all-time high because it was slightly overvalued. You know, but from to your point, that retiree who is paying a little more closely attention to it because he's not working, he doesn't have some of the other daily distractions that maybe they had when they were doing their job and working on a daily basis. Now they're like, well, gosh, I've given this much back from the high level. You know, and sometimes it's good to go back and point out, well, wait a minute here, from where you started to where you're at today, you're still way ahead. Yes, we gave some of those gains back that we probably shouldn't have received before. Some of that especially came out of the bond side for those balanced portfolios. I remember you and I had that conversation that when interest rates had started going down, when people weren't expecting them to go down, and some of our cash flow bond portfolios that had longer duration, boy, they jumped in value. And we went through and reminded people, hey, look, we're holding these bonds because we need this cash flow, and we can't replace it if we sell them and take advantage of this appreciation. But don't get overly excited about the price on the statement to the upside, because we're going to give some of that back, because we're going to move our way back down to par value. Now we're telling that similar story, except on the opposite side, in which those bonds are down considerably in those longer duration cash flow accounts. But once again, as long as the credit quality is okay, once they get close to maturity, they're going to work their way back to par. So we're going to have that move in that opposite direction. But it is difficult for people to not look at that year-end statement and feel as though that their losses are purely from the high point down to where they are. And I get it. It was your money. It was real dollars that were invested. But at the same time, we know that it fluctuates every single day. And what needs to be more focused on, especially for those in retirement, is, number one, is the income needs that you have being met? And number two, what kind of performance do you need long term to be able to sustain this type of income into your unknown departure? Because that's the other difficulty. We know what the mortality table says, but we develop that average by some people passing sooner and some people passing much later. So it's a moving target for every one of our clients as far as how long they need that money. But in retirement, that can be a more important thing is, yep, my cash is continuing to come. I've got a few years protected nice and safely. I've got some other things in my soon bucket that are pretty safe and conservative and will allow us to replenish that. Those are some of the things for the retirees to focus on a little bit more so than just pure performance. Not that performance is not important to them. It's probably just not number one or number two on the scale of importance.
And it is your money, and that's why we do the show every single week. I gave this example to someone that I think made sense why bond values go up and down. So I said, let's say you have a rental house, and it's worth $100,000, and you get $600 a month rent. And you say, you know what, I'm going to fix this for 20 years. So you're going to pay $600 a month for 20 years. So it's like a bond. And let's say that rents go up to $700 or $800 a month. And you say, hey, I want to sell my house. Guess what? It's going to be worth probably less because if I buy your house, I have to honor that contract, and I'm stuck with $600 a month for the next, 18 years. So it's worth less. The opposite goes as well. So things go bad and rents go down, and now the average rent out there is $400 a month, but I'm collecting $600 a month, and I'm good for the next 18 years. My value of my home goes up. Bonds work exactly the same way. So we saw rates go down about a year ago, or sorry, 2020, 2 years ago, around 0.7 on the 10-year to now over 3.1 on the 10-year. That's a monster move, and that's why the current bonds that you own that were bought yielding the 2 or 3% now are yielding 4 or 5. It's just the way it works. Now, at some point, will rates come back down? They will. It always does. In fact, Eric and I had a conversation today about this. I know you've talked to him quite a bit, that our crystal ball is foggy like everyone else's, but what we do know is that the United States cannot afford for the Treasury rates to be at really high rates. Why? Because our cost of borrowing. When rates were at 1.5% and we're borrowing $30 trillion, that's the same cost at 3% at 15. So if we continue, if we're now at 30, going to move into 40 trillion over the next 10 years, if the numbers hold true, which they never do, they're always under what they say, and rates continue to be 3, 4, 5%, that just absolutely destroys the budgets, the budget of the United States. And guess what that means? Either we continue to borrow more, if allowed by the reserve currency that we currently hold status, or we raise taxes, or maybe a combination of both. So, Rod, that's the psychology, the math behind the bond world. And speaking of psychology, you and I have talked a lot about this, that if you're sitting at work and all of a sudden you open your statement and it's worth $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $100,000 less or even more, it doesn't matter, your confidence starts to get shaken a little bit. And it moves to your pocketbook and your spending habits. We've seen this for years. That's when you start to see things slow down. So raising rates, bad stock market, slowing housing market because of the cost of borrowing, all of this kind of builds into a natural phenomena, a lowering prices, lowering inflation. And that's why I think the Fed will come out in July, do what they say they're going to do. I think they may do it again in the, at the next meeting, or maybe they'll say, hey, we're going to start watching the data. Because he didn't come out and say, we're absolutely for sure going to, do this. He just said that this is what we're doing for now. And I think that language might lighten up a little bit as the data shows that, hey, there are some areas that are slowing down.
Yeah, and I think that's the big key. And that's an area that I've been discussing on Glass's show, is that does the deterioration in consumption happen far faster than the data that the Fed looks at shows it? Because we know the data that the Fed looks at, for the most part, is all lagging data. It's what's already happened, and then they're using that to try and analyze what goes on moving forward. And I'm sure the Fed and the Fed members have conversations with people no differently than you and I do, but that's where it's felt in the beginning, is on the street. it's with the small businesses. It's with the realtor. It's with the mortgage lenders. Those are the areas that you first begin to feel and see that, oh, high inflation and higher interest rates are beginning to have an impact. But it'll take a little bit before it shows up. You know, as I had alluded to, I think on last week's show, maybe even 2 weeks ago, I was surprised at how strong MasterCard's number was for the previous month in which they track spending. And came out, and it was very strong for the retail consumer. And it's like, okay, well, at least up to this point, consumption still seems to be strong, and that's very key. But that has been what we have had some minor concerns on, that maybe it would unravel a little quicker than the data that the Fed's looking at. But I think Jerome Powell, through the whole process, since he has been in charge of the Fed, has been very good at telling us, if he needs to make a change, they're willing and going to make a change based on what they see in the data that they're analyzing. So while they have stated they would like to see the federal funds rate at 3.5% by the end of this year, does not mean that conditions will merit that they actually get all the way to 3.5 by the end of this year.
In fact, in the May meeting notes, it said, you know, it resulted in the 50 basis point increase, the largest since 2000. But in that post-meeting press conference, he said an additional 50 basis point hike are likely, right? Likely. To your point, yep. They changed direction before. I mean, heading into, I forget what year it was, but they had planned to raise the rates the next year two or three times, and they ended up lowering the rates. So I personally, folks, I just think that you got to hang on, because the market is reacting to what they think the Fed is doing based on what they're saying. But the reality of it is, I believe that they'll slow this thing down a little bit quicker, meaning slowing the fact that they're raising interest rates. But don't forget, they're trying to reduce a balance sheet too. When you're the number one purchaser of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, which have kept mortgage rates very, very low, and now you're not, in fact, you're a net seller, Japan's selling treasuries at a pace they've never done before, that's pushing rates up. So they're already slowing demand down by unwinding this balance sheet on top of raising rates. So like Rod said, I have all the confidence in the world. And Robin, you said that they're having conversations like you and I are having. I hope they're having higher level conversations, because we do throw in IU basketball recruiting here and there. And maybe they do too. Yeah. Probably not IU, but whatever their favorite school is.
And probably broader reach, because that's one thing we always have to be cautious of, that the feedback we get is more pertinent to the specific market of Monroe County or Bloomington, and maybe not be a great gauge of what's going on regionally or nationally. So hopefully, because they have Fed governors spread out throughout the country, they can have those conversations and then pool together all of the feedback they're getting to say, okay, is this a trend just in the Southwest, but here's more likely the trend for the rest of the nation type of a deal? Because you do always, you know, Monroe County from a real estate perspective is a very interesting and unique market. So what happens to real estate in Monroe County isn't always the best gauge of what may be going on in the rest of the state of Indiana, let alone outside the state.
Well, and just so you as listeners have some idea, you're sitting in your house thinking, man, this thing's worth a lot of money. I could sell it. Yeah, you're going to sell it, but are you going to move? I mean, you have to move to Greene County, Owen County, Lawrence County, and even those counties are now starting to show some pretty aggressive moves in their real estate. But what I'm seeing is out-of-state money coming in. It's people, you know, leaving California, they're leaving Jersey, and they're getting, you know, $1 million for their 1,500 square foot home, and they come here and they think it's a bargain to buy something at $680,000 or $700,000. So yeah, Rod's right. I mean, we got to get out of our little bubble and see things from a more macro standpoint, and that's what we hopefully we're doing. Rod, great job as always. I know we've got a big long week ahead of us, and I know you know, anything can change. So by the time this show airs, because we're recording early, so I can head off to my Ed Slot Elite Advisor Group meeting in Kansas City this Thursday. By the time you're on Big Show Friday, you never know, right? You could have an entirely new thing to talk about.
You don't even know from morning to afternoon that the market is going to finish the way it opened. So, yes, each day, and especially this year, which we had said, expect a lot of volatility. Each and every day is kind of a new bag of tricks that we're not 100% certain exactly what we're going to get on a daily basis, but we still feel fairly confident when we start looking at 3, 5, 10, 15-year pictures. But day-to-day, week-to-week, quarter-to-quarter can be extremely hard to predict ahead of time.
All right, folks, thanks, Rod. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the history of Catch-22. Do you feel like you're kind of in the Catch-22 right now? Dang if you do, dang if you don't. We'll be back, talk about how you evaluate that. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Doug Hughes will be joining us live in the studio in just a few minutes to talk about this particular topic of Catch-22. You know, we've all been there, right? Dang if you do, dang if you don't. But I think it's interesting when you go back and further explore the pitfalls of being in a Catch-22. If you actually go back and refer to Joseph Heller's Catch-22, which is a book, it's kind of interesting to go back, it's a famous book. It helps shed a little light on the true nature of Catch-22. So Catch-22 basically it originated from this World War II bomber, a pilot, and he and his friends served in the bombing crews in World War II, stationed in an air base just off the coast of Italy. One by one, his friends flying into battle got shot down and never came back. Soon, he began to realize that if he continues to go on these bombing missions, he will also be shot down and he'll never come back. So he starts to study the Air Force rules and regulations, and he comes across a rule number 22. Rule 22 says that if you can successfully plead insanity, you can get honorably discharged from the Air Force. So he decides that's what he's going to do. So he goes up to the Air Force physician, and he asks to be released from duty on the grounds of insanity. The physician says that the fact that you're trying to get out of flying these bombing missions is actually proof that you're perfectly sane. Therefore, you must continue on these bombing runs. Thus, the Catch-22 phrase was created. And do we still use it today? You bet we do. And that's the rock and the hard place, right, that we find ourselves in. We find ourselves in making decisions when we're in between a rock and a hard place, relationships, investments, whatever it might be. You're just in a rock and a hard place, the Catch-22. I'll give you a quick story about my wife and I. So, you know, you guys all know I coach youth football and have forever and ever and ever. Well, it's really important to me, right, to be at every game. Well, my nephew's getting married in northeast Ohio. I mean, a long, long drive. So we head over there. This was a couple of years ago. And I knew I had to be back on that Sunday at noon at Bloomington North to coach a youth football game. So I knew. So for months, I knew this was going to happen. My wife did not know it was going to happen. So on our way to the wedding, I said, hey, Sunday morning, why don't you ride back with our friends George and Betty, who were also attending the wedding? And she said, why? I said, well, I need to get up around 2 in the morning, maybe 3, and drive back to Bloomington because I have a game to coach at noon. And she says, oh, you've got to be kidding me. You've known for months that And I said, why didn't you tell me? And I said, well, I just decided that you could have been mad at me for 2 months or just for like a day, and I chose a day. That was a rock and a hard place, right? And now did I make the right decision? I don't know. But on that Sunday morning when I got up, guess who else got up? She got up, and so did Will. They got up, and they packed in that car, didn't speak to me for about 2 hours. One, it was 3 in the morning, but two, I think she was a little bit mad at me. But guess what? By the time we got back to Bloomington, she was completely fine. We coached the game. We win the game. We all go to eat afterwards, and everything was fine. But that's the rock and the hard place, right? The Catch-22. I think in the investment world, you find yourself in that Catch-22 right now. Should I make some changes? What if I don't make changes? What if I do make changes? Will I miss out? And I gave you the statistics earlier twice, right, that the last 7 times that we've had a rolling 12-month period where we've had declines, we have had a pretty successful rally thereafter. And if you sit there and say, okay, I'm going to bail on the market, and then all of a sudden it takes off in June or July or whenever, and it's up 15% like it has been on average the last seven times, then you may be like, man, I really messed up. That's the catch-22. You're kind of in a hard spot right now. So there are things that you can do. We're doing them. I know the most portfolio managers are doing them. You know, switching off risks, trading this for that. You know, trying to be in sectors that are doing a little better than the other sectors, or now taking maybe advantage of some really deep discounted prices in other areas. So there's things that you can be doing, and hopefully all these mutual fund managers that you put your money and your faith in, or independent advisors, or whoever it might be, are doing something. And I told Rod and the gang this morning that most of the time, you know, you're better off not doing anything, just kind of sticking to your guns and writing it out. But most people like to know you're doing something. You know, they just want to know that you're doing something. And there are things that you can do that I think will make you feel like you're out of the catch-22, maybe put you in a little better recovery position, and just simply write it out, because you don't want to do something silly. You don't want to bail on something just because you're feeling anxious, right? We've seen this. We saw it in 2020. Now we saw the recovery happen much quicker than anyone anticipated. Yes, bear markets do take some time, right? Are we in a bear market? I mean, we're certainly in a correction territory. If we stay in this for another, you know, quarter or two, we could certainly say, yeah, we're in a short-term bear market. Some might say we could be in a long-term bear market, but we rarely are. Most bear markets don't last a long time. And most of the time, the recovery happens fairly quickly, 9 months to about 2 years. 2 years is sometimes kind of long. When I look at the bear market of 2000, 2001, 2002, when we were down over 40% over it was like 48% over 3 years, that was terrible. People lost complete faith in things. But if you looked at what was down, you kind of got an understanding that not everything's down. And that's why when you look at investing, you don't want to be all in one thing or all in the other thing. Diversification still actually works. Now, you've heard us say, I think you can diversify yourself completely out of returns, but I think you can also diversify yourself into some really great risk management. Do I think you should be in, you know, every single style box, every single sector? No, I don't. I mean, people will say, oh, I need to be in everything, right? From emerging markets to small cap, mid cap, large cap, value, growth, commodities, everything across the board. No, you don't. But you should have some diversity within those asset classes. So that's why the big dividend payers haven't done that bad. If you look at a basket of the more, the non-discretionary stuff that people use no matter what, they've done quite well. You look at energy, it's done quite well. And when Rod was saying at the office early this morning that, yeah, it's hard when you're down 3-4% to say, hey, you know, you're really outperforming the market, you're still down. And that is in a pretty good spot if you're only down 3-4% based on the fact that NASDAQ's over 20%. And some stocks in the high tech are down nearly 50%, right? You should feel pretty good with an S&P down 14, call it 13, 14, that you're just down 4. So that's why I'm saying that, yeah, you may feel like you're in a catch-22 and you can get yourself out of that rock in a hard place by talking it through, talking it out. You know, and just like my wife getting over her anger pretty quickly, most of the time these markets get over their tantrums, which is what's happening right now. We've had this, you know, taper tantrum before, but this is something at a degree we haven't experienced before. We have a Fed aggressively raising rates, aggressively unwinding the balance sheet. That they're in a catch-22, right? Darn if you do, dang if you don't. And that's a position I would not want to be in. But as Rod said, just good common sense, good investments. Keep doing what you're doing. Everything will work out just fine. All right, let's take a break. Hopefully when we come back, we'll have Doug Hughes in the studio. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Hughesy? It's hard to be part of the show when you're locked out.
Well, it is, but hey, I'm here and I'm excited to be involved.
Yeah, it's been a while since you've been on. Both of us have been in conferences, obviously just playing a little defense, trying to do a little offense when appropriate. and people have been a little nervous. But, you know, it's interesting because I've always said that when you're in our position, that we're kind of like the utility company. People only call when the lights don't come on.
Right.
And to their credit, whatever we've done, whatever we're doing, we just haven't received the calls and the worry. But, you know, we want to be preemptive. We're going to put out a video today, or we're going to record it today. It'll probably go out in a few days. Just giving people some idea of where we stand on things. Of course, it's more specific to our folks, right? Not the broad audience that we share here on the radio. But yeah, I mean, Rod was on earlier, did a great job as always putting the things in perspective. I tried to give some perspective on the fact that, hey, you know, when you widen your lens a little bit and you say, hey, let's quit focusing on what's happened the last 4 months or now moving into 5 months, but let's look at the last year or year and a half. It starts to put you in a little better light. I told someone the other day, you know, look where you were 2 years ago and look where you are today. I mean, if you would have went to bed and woke up and saw that you went from here to there, would you have been happy? Yeah, I think I would have been. Well, you got to put that, put that in your back pocket and go with it. You mentioned before we came on, you know, about maintaining the purpose of your portfolio. Like, what are you investing for? If you're 40, 50 years old, you're planning to work 20, 25, 30 years, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, good disciplines today lead to freer options tomorrow. And it is to go back to the purpose of your money. It's easy to lose track of the purpose. And one of the things that we've tried to do so hard with the people that we work with is talk about the purpose of your money. And one question is your purpose to beat the S&P 500? And what does that really mean? Because that's what we've been told repeatedly through the media. Well, to beat the S&P 500, that means you're going to have to take on some added volatility and make some sector bets and do some things that could be, you know, a little bit volatile as people are learning in this year. Or is your purpose to be able to say, okay, if inflation is here, I want to be here. I want to have a more absolute return approach or a more targeted return approach. So, you know, David, we've talked to people for a long time about the difference between tolerance and target. And most questionnaires are what you call risk tolerance questionnaires. They're not risk target questionnaires. And we, for years, have talked about risk target versus risk tolerance. And what a lot of people are feeling today is that they answered a risk tolerance, not a risk target. And the difference being that risk tolerance would say, hey, I'm okay to be down 10%. Well, 10% on $500,000 is $50,000. People may not actually feel that way when it's in dollars, not in percentages. A risk target might be is I would really rather not be down more than $25,000 or something like that. Now, that's almost impossible to get completely right, but the difference between a target and a tolerance is wide. And that's why you have to have this discussion about the purpose of your money. If it's for income, it's for income. If it's for growth, it's for growth. If it's for absolute return, it's for absolute return.
Yeah, and also segmenting those dollars and having different risk tolerance for each buckets. I mean, my risk tolerance for the money in the bank is zero, right?
Right, right.
My risk tolerance for money that I need for the next few years to provide income, that's different than money I don't touch for 10 years. Real quick before we take another break, because we're running a little bit long. One, you know, I mentioned rates going up and bond values down, but there's a lot of good in the rates going up. For savers, that's great. We're seeing money sitting in bank accounts earning still basically nothing, and there's no reason for the banks to raise those rates on your savings and checking account. There's plenty of money in the bank. They don't have to do it to attract dollars. They're still making an incredible spread on some of the loans, so why would they? But you can move into the outside world. I saw an insurance fixed contract, 3.1% on a deposit of $100,000 or more.
For 3 years.
An A credit rated company. I mean, that is now there, and it just hit us in the face like that.
That's right.
It all came about. So if you have some lazy dollars out there, be aware that pretty short-term dollars are paying you quite a bit.
Absolutely.
And you should take advantage of that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got some headlines, if we get to it, I wanted to get your reaction on. But really, the thing I wanted to spend a little time on next, Doug, is you came up with this phrase that I'm going to answer some questions that you're going to have for me 10 years from now. So when we get to the next segment, we only have about 5 minutes, but we want to talk about what are some of those answers to those questions that many of you will have for us 10 years from now? This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. I was going to have some fun with Husey. Basically, I was going to give you some economic headlines and make you believe that those were all headlines of today. Economic woes abroad helped drag dollar up, actually. Just on and on and on. Economy strengthens, even though, I mean, market's down. I mean, just boom, boom, boom. And then you were going to say, oh, yeah, that's all. Well, you weren't going to say it. I wasn't going to let you mess up here, you know, softy. But I was going to say, these sound like current events, but these actually are headlines from 2000 to 2002.
Wow.
So, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it certainly rhymes.
That's right, yes.
Doug, I know you've phrased this term that I'm going to help answer questions that you're going to have for me 10 years from now. Certainly, we're not going to be able to cover it all, but I know you talk about long-term care. You talk about inflation. You talk about, you know, lifestyle and spending patterns down the road. Give us just a little insight on when you say something like that to someone, what are you trying to accomplish?
So one of the things we try to accomplish is to be able to say there's some questions that you're going to be, you know, asking today at 50, you're going to be asking at 60. One of those is, interestingly enough, someone comes in at 50, they'll say, am I going to be able to retire? And they look out at a projection and what their savings rate is and what it's supposed to accumulate to. And then by the time they get to 60, David, you've experienced this like I do. You know what people ask at 60, 10 years later? Am I going to be able to retire? So some of these questions are redundant. They continue on. They're in perpetuity until you get to retirement. Another one is long-term care. And people have a real stand back, a pushback with long-term care because it can be expensive. But we know there's a lot of vehicles today that really help you address this. But when people are 50, they don't want to spend money for that. But then they get to 60 or 65, then they'll say, hey, you know, what about long-term care? And then it's even more expensive. And so I think the heavy lifting of some of the bigger planning questions come in that you're going to ask me this 10 years from now, so let's get it addressed today.
Right.
Some of the bigger, more costly, heavier lifting things, which would be healthcare and retirement, which would be long-term care, which would be estate planning.
How do I maintain purchasing power?
How do I maintain purchasing power? What does inflation look like? You know the reverse rule of 72, right?
Right.
And you know, these are conversations that we've had on this radio show for over a decade. And now here we are. And inflation is the thing that's on everyone's mind. And, you know, we're not saying that we have a crystal ball or anyone does, but it's hard to imagine that we wouldn't have steady to maybe gradually increasing inflation. Maybe not huge waves high like we've experienced in the last few headlines, as you mentioned. But it's hard to imagine that we might not have, you know, that eating away at your, you know, fixed income or eating away at your purchasing power. And so we've been talking about it for over a decade, the reverse rule of 72, and here we are. It's right in front of us now.
Yeah, and I have a client that's in their 70s this week, just concerned about that loss of purchasing power. And I just asked the question, you know, are you spending the same amount of money you spent 10 years ago when we first met? And you were 67 at the time. Now, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. Right. So you have your go-go, slow-go, and no-go years. So many times your personal spending habits will slow down and combat that rising inflation. So we as planners will put in front of you these inflation numbers that will absolutely scare the crap out of you but it assumes you're spending on an inflation-adjusted basis the same at 92 as you are at 62, and that's just not practical. So there are things like that that you can help calm people down. You don't want to push it aside and say, don't worry about it. But again, answering questions that you'll have for us 10 years from now. We're going to take a break, come back, wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's program. Of course, continue to listen to the 2025, The Final Drive, the podcast. We are now on episode number 16, I believe, and we're continuing to try to put out some pretty good content, stuff that doesn't take you long to listen to, maybe 10, 15 minutes tops. Doug, thanks for your cameo today. We appreciate that.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
I'm going to have you pinch hit on glass in the afternoon on Wednesday, if you don't mind doing that call in, and we're going to head off to Kansas City for our Ed Slott Elite IRA Advisor group meeting, which we have not had live in 2 years. So very excited. I'm getting texts and phone calls from all my buddies, advisors all around the country that are absolutely fired up. And got a lot of new members joining, so I will be out there Wednesday afternoon for new member orientation as I'm a charter member and part of Ed's board. So looking forward to that. So I hope everyone has a great week. Keep calm, and we'll be here each and every week, hopefully to continue to, you know, give perspective on things and hopefully keep you from doing something that you probably shouldn't do. Have a great one, everyone. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.